Hello, everyone. My name is Isaac Taylor, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. I was out of the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is the new moon Sabbath, the fourth month, number 1, 2028. Well, it was June the 7th, 2024. It was sort of first service day of the summer, and then we're going to a continuation of our parish. We're in part number 3, we're on page 46, and we're going to do a little review from our last study. Our prayer thought, Psalms 81. Sing aloud unto Yahweh our strength. Make a joyful noise unto the Yahweh of Jacob. Take a psalm and bring hither the timbrel, the pleasant harp with the parson. Blow up the trumpet and the new moon in the time appointed on our solemn feast day. For this was a statute for Israel and a law of the Yahweh of the Jacob. This he ordained in Joseph for a testimony when he went out through the land of Egypt, for I heard a language that I understood not. I moved his shoulder from the burden, and his hands were delivered from the pots that caused him trouble, and I delivered thee. I answered thee in the secret place of the thunder. I proved thee at the waters of Meribah. Hear, O my people, and I will testify unto thee. O Israel, if thou wilt hearken unto me, there shall no strange God be in thee, neither shalt thou worship any strange God. I am the Yahweh, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. Open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. But my people would not hearken unto my voice, and Israel would not of me. So I gave them up unto their own harsh lust, and they walk in their own counsel. Oh, that my people had hearkened unto me, and Israel had walked in my way. I would soon have subdued their enemies, and turned my hand against their adversaries. For the haters of the Yahshua should have submitted themselves unto him, that their time should have endured. This is, but their time should have endured. The words, the quick word is, that their time should have endured forever. For he should have fed them also. But, and that is another word, it says, for he would have fed them also with the finest of the wheat, and with the honey out of the rock, should I have satisfied thee. End of Psalm 31, let's read Psalm 82, Psalms 81. Let's read Psalms 82 now. For Yahweh standeth in the congregation of the mighty. He judges among the gods. How long will you judge unjustly and accept the persons of the wicked? Defend the poor and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and needy. Deliver the poor and needy. Rid them out of the hand of the wicked. They know not, neither will they understand. For they walk in the darkness, and all the foundations of the earth are out of course. I have said, ye are gods, and all of you are children of the Most High. Surely you shall die like men, and fall like one of the princes. Arise, O Yahweh, judge the earth, for thou shalt inherit all nations. This is Yahshua. Arise, O Yahshua, and judge the earth, for thou shalt inherit all the nations. So when Yahshua comes back and inherits all the nation, it's going to be with his underservant, and typically Elijah, that's going to work with him. It's like John the Baptist worked with Yahshua 2,000 years ago. It's like Yahshua worked with Elijah the Tishbite against Ahab and the whole nation of Israel in his day. All right. That's the end of our prayer thought. Let's go right on into our study. We're on page 45 of track 6, 5 prayers by Vichyhala. It says, well, the spirit of prophecy and its counterfeit. One may say, yes, I believe in the spirit of prophecy, but not as you do. Yet if what he believes to be the spirit of prophecy does not lead him to keep the commandments of the Yahweh and to know that the testimony of the Yahshua is as the ever-active spirit of the prophecy, Revelation 12:17-19:10, then he had better forsake that and accept this. For he that said, I know him and keep it not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. 1 John 2:4. Likewise says Yahshua, whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in the one point, he is guilty of all. James 2:10. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may enter into the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. If moreover was such a one believes to be the spirit of prophecy is truly it, then it should have revealed the truth herein unfolded. Thus what he accepts rather than what we accept as the spirit of prophecy would have been confirmed and exalted. Not long ago, a minister said, my conception of the spirit of prophecy is different from yours. For the spirit, for the prophecies in the Bible are my spirit of prophecy. Now, so he must say, if the spirit of the prophecy were not ever active, but the spirit of the prophecy begins and ends with the Bible, then all apostolic believers have the spirit of prophecy. If this is so, though, why does the Revelation make the distinction between the apostolic and typical apostolic believers who have the spirit of prophecy and those who do not? Well, this minister's idea is to say the belief illogical, for it puts Revelation 12:17 and 19:10 in the realm of the meaningless. But what he is still worth, this same minister, is later speaking unto his congregation, made the shepherd's rod teaching appear kind of contradictory to Mrs. Weisbrother, which he then termed the spirit of the prophecy. Yes, it is hard to believe that the ministers in whom the multitudes place their confidence would be so inconsistent, and that these ministers would be so blind and so ignorant about them. Throughout these pages, the spirit of prophecy has, by the prophetic word, proved itself invulnerable unto the attack, for it has vindicated itself not as a voice beginning with the Moses and ending before the John the Baptist, but as the ever-living testimony beginning with the creation and continuing with the patriarchs, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, then with the prophets, next with the apostles, and finally with the messengers of the Yahweh in our own day, and on, rising higher and higher with each encounter, as the reader can readily see. It will rise still higher when it is next considered that the reflections cast upon the one's character do not affect the truth. Having failed by the fair means successfully for the refuting of the sister wife's work, some have long been resorting to attacking her character. Do any think that the degradation of the character makes one's writings untrue? If so, then what will they do with the Balaam's prophecy concerning the Yahshua, our Savior, for the character of this faithless prophet was so degraded that even while he was coveting gain from the wicked king of Moab, he was in the deepest hypocrisy, offering up sacrifices to Yahweh for him to curse Israel. Yet while engaged in this perfidy, he uttered the most sublime prophecy of the Yahshua: "There shall come a star out of the Jacob, and the scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab and destroy all the children of Sheth. And Edom shall be a possession." Edom is Esau. Esau is the oldest brother of the twins, Jacob, him and Jacob. "For Seir also shall be a possession for his enemy, and Israel shall do valiantly. Out of the Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city." Numbers 24:17-19. So it says, "Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion, and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city." Well, we know Yahshua comes out of Jacob. Even in these last days, he comes back from heaven. He sits upon the throne of David. That's in Isaiah 9:6-8. Luke 1:32. Dare any now repudiate Yahshua just because a wicked prophet prophesied of his coming? Here every believer in the word of the Yahweh is compelled to admit that Balaam's covetous character did not make his prophecies false. How then could charity considerations today any more than this to justify one rejection of the word of the Yahshua and thus sinning against the Holy Spirit? Furthermore, those who resort to the personality will, upon the examining of themselves, find their own character sevenfold worse. Yet, while they are spending thousands of dollars and years of hard labor to destroy the people's confidence and the ones against whom they prefer false charges, they in turn plead that the same multitude should accept their teaching, although in reality their own dingy characters make this as white by comparison as white as snow. But the greatest mystery lies in the fact that the multitudes cannot discern this mountainous inconsistency. If Mrs. White's supposedly crooked territory makes her ride as crooked, then how is it that they make straight, noble, commandment-keeping characters of those who love them? Two, how can we depend on the writing and the speeches of the such who descend into the depths to judge her without a hearing? While she is trying, lying in her grave, unable to defend herself, they have no more refuted her writing than did the Pharisees refute the teachings of the Asherah. And as the Asherah's enemy could not, by their criticism, change his character from holy to unholy, neither can Mrs. White's adversary make her crooked if she is straight, as the true follower of the Asherah cannot, however, afford to waste his time in either running down or defending the human beings for our sole purpose, therefore, is for the vindication of the truth of Yahweh and for the exposing of the fact that the opposition has done nothing more than to demonstrate a pseudo-refutation. For the exposing of this, we need simply to recall the reader's attention and to the strongest attempt. The one which is the hub of the whole controversy and the one which exemplifies their tactics as well as the brand of the refutation for this effort will bring to the surface any error, whether it be Mrs. White's or her opponent. Any book published against her interpretation of the 2300 day of the Daniel 8:14, the author said, let us compare these statements of the Mrs. White and see how they compare with the Bible, our foregoing scripture. First, the scriptures tell us positively that when Yahshua went into heaven, he went into the presence of Yahweh and sat down on his right hand. Mrs. White denied this and said that Yahshua went into the heaven and into the first apartment of the sanctuary and ministered before the veil, which was before the Yahweh for 18 centuries. How could Yahshua be in the presence of Yahweh and on his right hand and at the same time he ministered before him with an intervening veil between? Would it not be much better to reject what Mrs. White said on this point and accept the word of Yahweh? If we accept Mrs. White's statement, do we not have to deny the Bible? If Mrs. White's statement is true, that Yahshua ministered before the Yahweh as the priest minister stated in the first apartment of the earth, earthly sanctuary, presenting before the Yahweh the blood of the sin offering, then where was the Yahweh? Was he not in the second apartment? Can anyone deny that he was there, according unto the time, when the scripture teaches that he was overshadowing the mercy seat while the priests were ministering before the veil daily? For the 2300 day 1844 doctrine weighed and found wanting. Okay. Page 44. Having heard the plaintiff's charge, let us now hear the defendant's answer. As the author of the two italicized paragraphs feels positive that the Son of Yahweh has always been in the heavenly sanctuary. He therefore takes the position that when Yahshua ascended on the high, he could not have sat at the right hand of Yahweh anywhere else than in the most holy place of the heavenly temple. For this position leads him hastily to conclude that the Yahshua, immediately after his ascension, entered into the most holy apartment and there sat down at the right hand of Yahweh. Rather than that, he immediately ascended to the right hand of his Father's throne elsewhere in the heaven, as Mrs. White's writings explain. If it is true that the Yahweh's throne has always been in the sanctuary, then the position of Mrs. White's opponents is justified and the error should be exposed. That before we accept them and reject her, let us first ascertain whether or not Yahweh's throne was in the sanctuary when the Yahshua ascended on the high. To this end, we call attention unto the two thrones, each in a different place. At this I looked, says John, and behold, a door was open in the heaven, and the first voice which I heard was as it were the trumpet talking with me, which said, come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. And immediately I was in the spirit, and behold, a throne was set in the heaven, and one sat on the throne, and he that sat was looked upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. And there was a rainbow round about the throne, and it sat like unto an emerald. And round about the throne were the 24 seats, and upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in the white raiment, and they had on their heads the crowns of the gold. And out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thundering and voices, and there were 7 lamps of the burning, the fire burning before the throne, which are the 7 spirits of Yahweh, and before the throne there was a sea of the glass like unto the crystal, and in the midst of the throne and round about the throne were the 4 beasts full of the eyes before and behind. And I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne and of the 4 beasts and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as it had been slain, having 7 horns and 7 eyes, which are the 7 spirits of the Yahweh sent forth into all the earth. And I beheld and heard a voice of the many angels round about the throne, and the beast, and the elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of thousands. That's 100 million. Revelation 4:1-6, 5, 6, and 11. Belonging only in the sanctuary, the bleeding lamb and 7 lamps, therefore show that John was given a preview of a prophetic event to take place in the sanctuary above when the door there was to swing up open. Furthermore, and as much as the throne was set up in the sanctuary, after the door was open, there could not have been any throne there previously. Accordingly, after the ascension, I should have not sit on the sanctuary throne at the Father's right hand, but rather on the one where was a pure river of the life, clear as a crystal, proceeding out of the throne of Yahweh and out of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on the other side of the river, was the tree of life. Revelation 22:1-2. Remember, before the sanctuary throne is a sea of grass. And before the throne of Yahweh and the Lamb is the river of life. Now, only a curious person will attempt further explaining that these two are thrown, that one is Revelation 22, 1 and 2, and the other Revelation 4 and 5, all one and the same, or that sure after his ascension sat on the throne in the sanctuary. In the connection with the latter throne, there remains to be answered the two questions. When did the door open? When was the throne set up? We have already seen that in the John time the door was not yet open, and that the throne was not yet set up. Though these events did not take place then, they must take place before the close of probation, for the Lamb, as it had been slain, was brought there to atone for the sinful man, a work which cannot be done after the close of probation. It's therefore been a fact that this particular throne had to be set up after John's time and before probation's close. And if it were not set up in 1844 AD, as Mrs. White declared that it was, but her opponents please tell when it was, while waiting for an answer, the reader may consider the object of the setting up of the throne. What is John's description of this particular throne, about which were the multitudes of the angels, the Lamb, the elders, the beast, and the candlestick, admits that the one conclusion, that it is a throne of the judgment. It is the same judicial sitting that was also shown under Daniel. I beheld how the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of the Days that did sit, whose garment was white as the snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool, for his throne was like the fiery flame, and the wheels as a burning fire. Or actually, part four, I guess.
Part two.
Part three?
Two.
Part two?
Yes.
This is part two. We're on page 54. The title of our part two is The Object of Sitting Up the Throne. It says, Brother John's description of this particular throne, about which were the multitude of angels, the Lamb, the elders, the beast, and the candlestick, admits that the one conclusion that it is a throne of the judgment. It is this same judicial city that was also shown unto Daniel. I beheld till the throne was set up and placed around, and the Ancient of the Days did sit, whose garment was white as the snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000,000 ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judges were set, and the books were open. I saw in the night vision, and behold, one like the sun, a man came with the clouds of the heaven, and came unto the Ancient of the Days, and he brought him near before him, and of 7:9, 10:13. By the reading of verse 8, the student will notice that the throne which the Daniel saw was set up after the first student horn tower, which had the eyes like the eyes of a man and the mouth speaking a great thing, Daniel 7:8, last part. And then this wicked work. The words of the hills of the thorns were cast down, sent for youth, so that the thorns were not there before, again, forcing the conclusion that the sentence after Yahshua is a sentence. These thorns were set up. The judgment was set and the books were opened in 1844, according to William Miller's 2300-year prophecy that was given to him in 1833, to give unto the Adventists in 1844, with Ellen G. White as the leader. Verse 13 of Daniel 7 and verse 6 of the Revelation 5 show that one like the Son of Man is before the judgment throne as a lamb slain, ready to atone for the sinful man after the close of the probation. However, he is no longer as a sin-pardoned savior, but is then as a king of kings and sovereign of sovereigns, out of whose mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nation. Revelation 19:16-15. And further through the Daniel, the Spirit explained that during, not before the judgment, there is given of him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations and languages should serve him, and that his dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Daniel 7:14. Well, the scriptures make clear that while in the sanctuary Yahshua received the kingdom, after the thrones are set up and after the investigative judgment is completed. Well, the investigative judgment has been completed, but will be completed when the 144,000 comes forth with Yahshua at the head of on Mount Zion, the Revelation 14:1. Before his second coming. That don't make any sense. It's, what makes sense is to read this last paragraph again. For the scriptures make clear that while in the sanctuary, Yahshua receives the kingdom after the throne are set up, and after the investigative judgment of the dead since 1844, after 2002 at the Passover, 2002 by the time of 2003, the investigative judgment was over for the dead. It had begun for the living at the Passover of 2002 with the word of David Johnson as the ancient man before the house, Ezekiel 9:6. That was judged first by the Ezekiel 9. Okay, before the second coming, so the investigative judgment is completed. Before the second phase of the judgment begins, and when the second phase comes, Yahshua is here on this earth, close out the first phase of investigative judgment from 1844 to 2002, and to start the investigative judgment of the living. to start separating after the 144,000 set up, you're going to have let's don't get into that right now. It says, for the scriptures make sure that while in the sanctuary, and Yahshua went into the sanctuary in 1844, he went after the Ancient of Days, Yahweh, that was sitting on the throne, to start the investigative judgment of the dead. So instead of his second advent of coming to the earth, Yahshua's second advent was to go into the heavenly sanctuary where his father had already gone, and to start the investigative judgment for the dead. And that was on the Day of the Atonement, 1844. So now he says, this is so, that this is so is further evidenced by the parable of the Luke 19:15, which states that the Yahshua receives the kingdom. He comes to close out the judgment of the dead, 2002 at the Passover, and he comes to receive the everlasting kingdom of David and place his antipathical Elijah David, upon the throne of this visible kingdom that succeeded Esau's kingdom, as well as Jonathan at the helm from 1970 to 2003. Elijah David takes in his appointment unto the everlasting kingdom of David, and that afterwards he comes to slay his enemy. For he comes to slay his enemies in the time period that he also harvests the 144,000 in the 12th parabolic hour in the judgment of the living time, starting the first of the opening of the seventh seal, the Revelation 8, verse 1. Okay, Daniel 7:22. It says, showed that the judgment was given unto the saints of the Most High, and that after the judgment, they possessed the kingdom. Well, this is wrong, because it says the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. That's Daniel 7:18-22. It says that the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. And for what was that for? To take away the beast's dominion, Daniel 7:26-27, and consume and destroy it until the end. Whereas the executive judgment of all the wicked, of those who did not rise in the first resurrection, Revelation 20:5-6, takes place afterward while the wicked are in their grave, for it says to John, and I saw the dead, small and great, stand before the Yahweh, and the books were open, and another book was opened, which is the book of the life, and the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according unto their works. Revelation 20:12. After this judgment, the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according unto their works. Revelation 20:13. And whosoever was not found written in the book of the life was cast into the lake of fire. Revelation 20:15. This is the second death, Revelation 20:14. Okay, it says that since there are two judgments, each for a different time and class, and two resurrections, a thousand years apart, at least 20 verse 5, there are therefore two different thrones, one administrative and one judicial. For the administrative throne is at the head of the river of life, Revelation 22, 1 and 2, in paradise. For the judicial throne at the head of the fiery stream, Daniel 7, 10, the sea of glass, Revelation 4, 6, mingle with the fire, Revelation 15, 2, and the sanctuary, the ladders not having been set up until years after the Assyrian ascension, precludes the possibility of his being the one upon which he sat at the right hand of his father Yahweh. Consequently, after his ascension, Yahshua must have sat upon the throne that is at the head of the river of life, a circumstance which invests the throne with the title, the throne of Yahweh and the Lamb. From this administrative throne, the Father arose and in the flaming chariot, Isaiah 6:1, went into the holy of holies within the veil where the fiery stream, the sea of the glass is, and there sat down upon the throne. Revelation 4:2. Following this, Yahshua also rose up from the same throne and in a clouded chariot with the wheels, like the flaming fire, surrounded by the angels, was brought not to the right hand of Yahweh, but near before him, Daniel 7:13, to the judicial throne, where he was in the sanctuary. Thus was the solemn event signalized in 1844 when the judicial ceremony took place. This subject is elaborated in our chart number 3, the judgment and the harvest. Here are the simple facts of these prophetic events, and he who doubts the plain truth of them will later have to confess his mistake, but perhaps to no purpose, for then it may be forever too late to profit by him, though he confessed it cheerfully with a tear. Now, the reason that Yahweh's throne has not always been in the heavenly sanctuary, and that it will not always be there, is simply that the sanctuary is built only for the disposal of sin, as one can easily recognize through the service of the earthly, looking forward unto the time that there will be sin no more. John says, and I saw the temple therein, for Yahweh Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it, and the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of the Yahweh did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. Revelation 21, 22, and 23. By the chain of the facts here linked, the 1844 doctrine, instead of the being weighed and found wanting, now stands more substantial, solid, and sure than ever, showing that like all on the water, inspired revelations always rise to the top of the private theories, for the theories sinking down and away into oblivion, for the further study of the Revelation 4 and 5 His judgment, read the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, page 187 to 2001. My brethren, be not like the Jews of old, angered against the truth, hating its blazing light. To praise the Yahweh for giving you another opportunity for the performing while mercy yet lingers. And although heartfelt confession may humble one's pride of the opinion, yet it will enhance his character and cause Yahweh to exalt him in the due time. 1 Peter 5:6. With the eternal life, if the personal opposition to the message has stemmed purely from the misrepresentation or the misapprehension and misunderstanding engendered not by the self-interest but solely by a conscientious desire to avoid error, there is no condemnation to be laid unto one's charge. Only as one would stubbornly continue to reject evidence would the condemnation be upon him. The unfolding of the prophetic scroll will reveal unto all what manner of the Spirit Gospel Workers 302. They are not whether willing to exchange error for the truth or whether determined to identify themselves with the class who will forever be found ignorantly fighting against the truth. For the opponents of the truth, ignoring the inspiration and failing to give the matter again a painstaking thought, were naturally led to reject the doctrine of the 2300 days. First, upon the excuse that William Miller proclaimed the Yahshua's coming to the earth instead of his coming to judgment, and second, because of being prejudiced against the Sister White's inspiration, but as the Millers' religious connections were prominent, Yahweh could not have consistently left his people to grope and stumble in the darkness concerning his work. Good or bad, it too, like a Sister White's, must be found in the more sure word of prophecy, 2 Peter 1:19. So our attention is now called unto the Zechariah chapter 1. And I saw by the night, and behold, a man riding upon a red horse, and he stood among the myrtle trees that were in the bottom, and behind him were the red horses speckled and white. Then said I, O my master, what are thee? And the angel that talked with me said unto me, I will show thee what these be. And a man that stood among the myrtle trees answered and said, these are they whom the Yahshua has sent to walk to and fro through the earth. And they answered the angel of the Yahshua that stood among the myrtle trees and said, we have walked to and fro through the earth. And behold, all the earth sitteth still and is at rest. Zechariah 1:8-11. Okay, it says, for the two sheep and the young cow, Isaiah 7, all has, as already shown, given a more abundant supply of the milk than we can immediately deliver. So in the ensuing study of the Zechariah 1, we are compelled, just as we were in the study of Isaiah 7, also in that of the Zechariah 4, to dispense only the butter, cream, and to preserve the milk. In the vision of the Zechariah 1, we note that the horses whom Yahshua has sent to walk to and fro through the earth have the gift of the speech, for they answered the angel of the Yahshua and said, "We have walked to and fro through the earth." For the obvious import of this symbolism is that these horses can talk and that they are serving the Yahshua and are going where he sends them. For they therefore can be symbolical only of the Yahshua's servant, a ministry that is sent, and inevitably then the symbolism depicts a movement which goes forth with a message and which upon the finishing its work of the going to and fro through the earth returns without the clashing with the logic. One cannot suppose that this symbolism is prophetically descriptive of the gospel workers who are foreshadowed in the Yahshua's prophecy that this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all of the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come, Matthew 24:14. But we know what the gospel of the kingdom is. It's the teaching of the brother sanctuary of the Yahshua, brother everlasting covenant, Hebrews 10:19-20. The new and living way of the New Testament, and Hebrews 12:18-24. Matthew 24:14, further after the horses answer, "We have walked to and fro through the earth," meaning we have finished our work, the Yahshua commands them to cry yet, that is, proclaim again. And this command moreover shows that the Yahshua was yet to bestow his mercy upon his people and yet to finish his work of the salvation. For he said, "My cities shall yet be spread abroad, and the Yahshua shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem," Zechariah 1:17. Necessarily, therefore, the horses here in view depict a movement on foot which is organized for the proclaiming of the everlasting gospel throughout the earth, the United States, and prophecy is the earth. For the horses answered, "We have walked to and fro through the United States, earth and prophecy, and behold, all the earth sitteth still as a rift." So see, the shepherd Rob covered the whole United States Adventist whenever they took a charge of the kingdom in 1930, reveals that the movement thought its work finished and probation closed. In other words, it thought that the salvation, said Brother Everlasting Covenant of the Yahshua, which is called the gospel of Matthew 24:14, had closed, and that the preaching of it could no longer make the earth produce converts, for the subject of the symbolism being the production of the spiritual life, it necessarily calls for the salvation of the soul, not for the production of a vegetal or animal life, whereas in fact Yahshua commissioned them to cry yet, showing them that they were mistaken to determine whether this symbolical prophecy points unto Yahweh's servants of the past, of the present, or of the future. The most consult church history. Its pages record for its pages record that the Millerite movement is the only one which has gone with the message unto every Christian mission in the world. The Great Controversy 368. Well, here's the problem. William Miller's message wasn't the loud cry of the third angel. It wasn't the blood of the everlasting covenant. It wasn't the gospel, Matthew 24:14. So that's something that we've learned new just now. And thought most secondly that in so doing, the last gospel invitation had been sounded unto every living creature under heaven, thereby signalizing the close of the human probation. On the contrary, the gospel invitation for this time, instead of then being finished, had just begun, and instead of the Yeshua's coming then to the earth, he went to the heavenly sense, heavenly temple in heaven. The peculiar set of the circumstances surrounding the Millerite movement prior in 1844 certifies that it is the one that which is depicted in the symbolism of the Zechariah 1, and it should be remembered that the Yeshua did not, on the one hand, attach the warning, look out, for these horses are false, mistaken prophets. On the other hand, rebuke the horses, or command them to keep silent, but that instead he commanded them that they cry the more. And the angel of the Yeshua and the confirmation declares, these are they whom the Yeshua has sent. John the Baptist preached that Yeshua was to establish a literal kingdom at his first advent. And though John was mistaken, the Yeshua said of him, there hath not risen a greater prophet or greater than John the Baptist. Matthew 11:11. And in the view of the light now shining from the scriptures, anyone can see that those who are constantly crying out, wolf, wolf, and the derision of the 2300 days doctrine are wittingly or unwittingly working against Yahweh by attempting to silence his voice. They are doing the bidding of him who is trying to conceal the truth that the next after the Millerite movement must proclaim the gospel. Okay, the Millerite movement then was the third movement, Matthew 20:5. They were to call it the sixth hour. The fourth movement was Matthew 20:5, called it the ninth hour, the Advent in 1844. Now we have the fifth movement, which Elijah Davis in charge of, started in 2002 at the Passover, Kermit, Texas. Starting the journey of the living. Starting to open up the seventh seal, Revelation 8:1. Start the harvesting of the first fruits. First, 144,000, and then all the great multitude of the Gentiles of the world. But it says, the Millerite movement must proclaim the gospel unto many, but not unto all. This brings in verse 10. This is our contact. This is the 11th hour calling us. Number 11, click on the audio orca. We're going to close now with this song.
Higher Ground. I'm pressing on the upward way, in heights I'm gaining every day, till praying has overdone, I'll plant my feet on higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land, a higher plane and I have come. I plant my feet on higher ground. My heart has no desire to stay where doubts arise and there's dismay. Though some may dwell where these abound, my prayer, my hand is higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, with faith on heaven's table land. A higher plan than I have found, you'll plant my feet on higher ground. I want to live above the world, your safety's dark, set me a hurl. Her faith is called the joyful sound, the song of saints on higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land. A higher plan than I have found, I plant my feet on higher ground. I want to scale the utmost high and catch a gleam of glory bright. But still I pray till heaven I found, you lead me on to higher ground. You lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land. A higher plan than I have found, I put my feet on fire ground.